very much, and thank you all for being here. I'm going to talk about some of the impacts of the Horticulture Innovation Lab over the last almost 6 years of the program. And some of you were in the post-harvest session earlier this week, so there's a few slides in overlap, so apologies to those of you. First of all, why horticulture? And I think it's an important thing to talk about because I believe in development, horticulture has a very important role to play, not only in terms of income generation, but also nutritional and diet diversification. So horticultural crops are high value crops, so you can earn a good living just on a small plot of land. The nutritional benefits we all know very well, and they provide a lot of value to people's diets, particularly if they're mostly consuming staple crops. So important micronutrients and even phytonutrients as well. And in many parts of the world, women are heavily engaged in horticultural crop production and marketing. And so by empowering women, we can also help their families. The Horticulture Innovation Lab is currently active in a number of countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Central America, and Asia. So you can see the countries listed here. And most of these countries have prioritized horticulture as a crop that they want to improve their value chains for. Our program focuses on a broad range of topics. As you all know, horticulture is very broad in terms of the types of crops and the number of crops, but also, you know, everything from variety improvement all the way through to post-harvest handling and marketing. So it's a very broad approach. We also have particularly focused on innovation and also are starting to look at scaling up some of the processes and technologies that appear to be successful, so trying to get those adopted by more people. Capacity building is another area we emphasize, trying to engage individuals at universities and research organizations in the developing world in the research programs and the development programs we're doing to build their capacity to do research and also to educate their students. We're particularly focusing on nutrition in our horticulture programs. I'll mention one of our projects later. And then empowering women and also sharing information. You know, all the information at this conference and all the conferences in the past. I mean, we know so much about horticulture, and yet a lot of that information is not making it to the developing world. So just a little bit about some highlights from the last 5 to 6 years of the Horticulture Innovation Lab. So one technology I particularly want to highlight that we actually have been working on for about 5 years now is a seed drying bead technology. They're ceramic beads that are made from clay that's mined in China. And they're produced under high temperature and pressure. And the beads absorb moisture, similar to silica gel. But these beads will absorb moisture very, very effectively. So you can get the relative humidity down to nearly 0% in a very short period of time. I don't know if you can see that gauge, but it's reading below zero. So it's very, very effective at absorbing moisture, whereas silica will only take the relative humidity down to about 30%. So our initial focus with this project has been on vegetable seed, trying to improve the quality of vegetable seed that's stored, particularly in hot, humid climates like Bangladesh, India, Nepal. But we're expanding it now to dried foods of various types, so ground nuts, maybe potentially even corn if the economics bear out, dried chilies, and other types of products to reduce the risk of aflatoxin. And we've actually been working to scale up this technology. This shows the benefits in terms of seed viability and seed vigor. So the the rows with the red arrows were dried in the sun. The seeds were dried in the sun. You can see the germination is sparse. The plants are small as compared to the rows in with the black arrow where the seeds were held under with the drying beads. So it works great for a number of products. And as I said, we're working to scale this up with seed companies and processing facilities in Bangladesh this year. As I mentioned earlier this week in my other talk, post-harvest handling is a really key area that we're focusing on. It's important if we want to feed, 7 to 11 billion people. We have to reduce the amount of food that we're losing in order to feed all those people. So, and it's important for meeting market demands so that the income generation from growing horticultural crops is realized. So we've been looking at things like different cooling systems. We've been comparing this more somewhat utilized technology of evaporative cooling. This is an example of a charcoal cooler here. And this is what's called a zero energy cool chamber. They're both based on evaporative cooling. And in dry climates, these can work quite well. You can get 10, 20 degree decrease in temperature if you're in a dry climate. But in a hot, humid climate, they actually are not very effective. So in hot, humid climates in particular, we've been looking at this technology called the CoolBot. It's allowed you to build a small insulated room and attach a window air conditioner unit to that. The air conditioner unit has a special controller that's actually made by a company here in the United States that tricks the air conditioner to cool to lower temperatures. So it will cool down to 2 degrees Celsius. We can get pretty close to 0 degrees Celsius. So for 2,500 to $2,500, if you have an inexpensive room made out of, say, local materials, you could have a cold room. With a more insulated panel-built room, it's closer to $10,000. A significant investment, but quite a bit less than what it would cost to build a traditional cold storage room. In Bangladesh, we've been testing these cold rooms for potato storage for both seed potatoes and fresh, both white and sweet potatoes, and comparing that with the traditional storage, which is the ambient storage. So it's just essentially a rain-covered structure. And we were able to store sweet potatoes all the way up to Thanksgiving last year, which is unheard of. The people at the mission were quite happy about it because they were able to get sweet potatoes for Thanksgiving dinner. But it does help to prevent sprouting and bacterial decay and allow us to extend the storage of the potatoes. We do have some of them running on solar power, and it does work. Of course, it adds to the cost, but solar panels are coming down in price. And the nice thing about this is that then you don't have the monthly electricity cost to run the room, which can be an impediment. The other thing we're doing in the post-harvest area revolves around training. We supported a program that Lisa Kitanoya and Diane Barrett ran that trained 36 master trainers. They went through a year-long training to learn all about post-harvest practices, and then they came together in Tanzania at this post-harvest training and services center we built. And those people are now going out and training other people. And in 1 year, they had trained 10,000 farmers. Getting short on time here. So we've also been looking at solar drying as a way to try to extend the availability of products into the lean season when rain is not available and productivity is low. Solar drying technology has been used for years and years. We've been looking at an improved method that was developed at UC Davis that actually provides better airflow and higher temperatures, especially in cloudy conditions. And so essentially the way it works is the air flows across the product through this narrow chamber here and then up the chimney. And it's very effective. Sometimes the temperatures actually get too hot, but It's less expensive to build, has better capacity, and takes less time to dry the product. We're doing a real exciting project with Dr. Manny Reyes from North Carolina A&T University, where he's been focusing on conservation agriculture for vegetable production. So the principles are no-till, continuous mulch, and crop rotation. And then we also use drip irrigation with that. It's been very successful so far in Cambodia. We've just expanded it into Nepal. And we're also going to be doing a very large project on this in Guatemala starting very soon. And it seems to work very well for vegetable production and reduces the labor of the farmers significantly. The Horticulture Innovation Lab has established two regional centers, one in Central America at Zamorano University, one in Southeast Asia at Kasetsart University, and these are places where we trial some of the technologies that we're interested in. They do adaptive research with the technologies, they do trainings with farmers, and they also go out into the region to other nearby countries to do trainings of farmers and other trainers. So this is showing one of the center at Thailand. And I wanted to point out this the net technology here. This is one of the technologies that actually was pioneered by Matthew here with a project that the Horticulture Innovation Lab supported a few years ago. It's an insect barrier net that helps farmers significantly reduce the amount of pesticides that are applied, or sometimes eliminate them entirely. One of the programs we're particularly pleased with is a Trellis Fund program that actually was it was the brainchild of a graduate student working with our program from the very beginning, the very first day we started. And it's a way of engaging U.S. graduate students in international work. So we have very small grants, I mean like $2,000, that are available to developing country organizations, small NGOs in developing countries. And then we give a small award to the graduate students. And so they're both individual competitive processes, and then we match the student and the organization together. They communicate by email and by Skype, and then the student goes to the country to visit with the organization and help them with a challenge that they're facing and help link them up to the university. It's been very, very successful. We've had some students participate in the program that had never been out of the United States before, so it was quite an experience for them. The organizations also seem to really enjoy the program. We just this morning heard from a student from North Carolina State University who had gone to Honduras on a project with us. As I said, we're trying to have a more specific focus on horticulture and nutrition. We just funded a big project that's going to be led by Rutgers University, Jim Simon, to try and develop evidence that by promoting horticulture production and marketing, we can have an impact on people's diets. So we'll be looking at household dietary diversity and also for the producers and also the community in areas where we're working to improve the production of horticultural crops, particularly indigenous vegetables in this case. So with that, I think I'll wrap up just by saying there's various ways that you can connect with us. We have a newsletter that goes out on a monthly basis, and you can also sign up to be on that list to get updates from us in the future. So thank you for your attention.
This is the last talk of the session, so we have a couple of minutes to ask some questions.
Any questions? Comments?
Questions, Sebastian, were you disappointed this last go-around? Were there suggested changes or shifts in emphasis for you moving forward in the future and anything that you see further down the pipe?
Yeah, good question. Some of the suggestions were to reduce the number of countries we were working in. We were very scattered in quite a few places, to have more large projects, longer term, larger projects, rather than lots of small projects. let's see. They wanted more emphasis on nutrition, to really focus on that specifically in our program going forward. Yeah, those were the main things I remember. Yes.
I'm glad to see your partner was Amarana, because I've been there a couple of times and I was kind of disappointed with how much culture they did. They have such a good educational program for, you know, Spanish Latin America, and they have turned out so many excellent graduates, and the amount of horticulture going on there was rather tiny in comparison to the meat industry and the grain industry. That's really good. Who's your partner in Guatemala?
Well, in Guatemala, we've worked with a number of different groups. We're working with the University de Valle on a couple of projects.
That's the private one right in
City. Yeah, and they also have a mountain location as well.
Yeah,
and we've worked with some of the NGOs there as well.
I think one of the things that I thought about is every time I go to Central America, I'm just absolutely swamped by church groups and t-shirts that are getting off the planes. And while the government really isn't supposed to do that stuff, I really think that would be a tremendous way to do outreach if you could get one person from each of those to be a multiplier and go to Zamorano or something like that, and then just sort of
kind of help
churches. They could do so much more.
Right. We could figure out some way to offer some training.
The people who are
rotate them through.
Kind of scout troop type of things. If you train them in Zamorano or something like that, I think that would really give you a great multiplier.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting idea. Well, one thing interesting about the Zamorano Center is that the new director there, relatively new, Julio Lopez, he's been effective at getting the center to be actually part of the rotation that all the students do. So every student at Zamorano mm-hmm. now rotates through our center, our regional center, and they learn about horticulture, all the innovations that we're testing there, and they actually go out and work in the field there. So they're all getting exposed to horticulture now.
It was ironic when I was there because John Pocono was one of the founders, and, you know, there was still a little emphasis on horticulture.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's getting better, I guess.
Good. Yeah, I have one, Ben. Have you thought of having more type of partnership with some of the more domestic programs? I'm thinking more like USDA. Because some of the things that a lot of people who go to those countries do, they also can bring back things that will benefit our local growers.
Mm-hmm.
And you just point out the next project. And part of that, what I learned in Kenya when I was doing that, I was able to bring some of that knowledge back to U.S. and apply to our production system in Michigan.
Yeah.
And it would be good to make that type of give and give
linkage.
More.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, part of our mandate is to also benefit U.S. agriculture. It's, you know, depends on the administration at USAID, how much that's emphasized or de-emphasized, but it is in there in the language. And, you know, the Coolbot's another example of that. It's actually been taken up by a lot of small-scale farmers, and that's really where it was initially marketed. We have done a few things to try and outreach to the U.S. industry. One is we participate in a small farms conference in California and talk about some of the technologies. But, yeah, I think there's definitely opportunities for cross-fertilization, especially with the frozen small farms in the United States. Absolutely.
Since you are talking about cross-fertilization, I just wanted to jump in. Are the two universities, is it like Center for Excellence, one in Latin America and Honduras, and one in Thailand. Is there a way to connect these all to all the future university, at least one country specific, so that whatever the technology you get through your source, it can be delivered fastly to this university, and they can reach with the local resources and local grants in country and support the horticulture pipeline?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, we want to have a center in in Africa. We had made a start on one, but we kind of have to restart. The idea was to kind of have one in each region that would hopefully serve the region. The only reason we don't have one everywhere is just because of limited resources. But yeah, it's a great way to multiply out the information to other people.
Okay, on that, we will stop there. Thanks again, Beth.
Sure.